Experience the power of 5G with T-Mobile. With faster 5G speeds nationwide, you can upload your favorite videos super fast or game on the go. Plus, T-Mobile has more 5G bars in more places, so you can stay connected to what matters most from almost anywhere. Switch to T-Mobile today, the leader in 5G.
T-Mobile has America's largest 5G network, fastest based on median overall combined 5G speeds, according to analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence data 5G speeds for Q4 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
You know the old saying, selling like hotcakes? What does that even mean? What is a hotcake anyway? They should change it to selling like Hondas, because right now, Hondas are selling faster than ever. Probably because they're so rugged, long-lasting, and fuel-efficient. And if you want one, you should get to your local Honda dealer right away. Check out the 8-passenger Pilot, or maybe the adventurous Passport. But you gotta do it fast, because Hondas are selling like, well, Hondas. New models are arriving right now. Don't wait. See your local Honda dealer today.
I was in Salt Lake City and I went to, in Badlands, but I went to a restaurant there and it was a vegan restaurant.
Oh, yikes.
Does this ring a bell to you?
What's that?
I have no idea. I don't know how I got ended up at this, but my brother and sister-in-law are vegan and they don't eat meat. They used to, they don't eat meat anymore. And, anyhow, they talked about this restaurant. They're like, oh, it's so good. So we went to try it. I'm going to find the name of it for you. Because I was curious if you have heard of it.
I just had to say, I can't believe we're talking about this right now.
I'm with you, Tim.
Guys, it's just food. It was bagels and stuff. It's not that I'm not eating venison or elk or muley, but.
Yeah, you're going to blow away.
Oh, Hunt Camp is going to be great for you this year, Dave. Let me just tell you.
Yeah, make sure you're not put the recording yet, Tim. But if you're not, make sure you are. I mean, this is real information here. Vegan restaurant.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I'm going. Just for you, Dave, we're going all keto, man. It's going to be nothing but protein.
No, I'm just trying to, I just remember being like a real famous place or something. It was really good, but it was like, you know, like a bagel, some sort of stuffed bagel with cream cheese and all this crap.
Well, to me, you know, vegan is a great appetizer, you know, like a bagel. That's a great thing to prepare to eat the real food.
There you go. But, you know. I love it. Oh, man.
The other place I went to was out in an Outburger because I'd never been to one when I was.
Yeah, they don't have those over by us.
No kidding. You know, it's one of those things. What I like is it's got a pretty simple menu. You know, you don't go in there and you have 40 different options. It's like, do you want a single or double? I think is, and do you want cheese or not? I mean, it's kind of the extent of it. So
pretty simple.
It's just always got such a line, and it's quite frankly, it's not that good. And yeah. I'm a big believer in McDonald's, man. I frequent that location. I listened to this comedy skit a couple of years ago, and the guy's like, people are more embarrassed to be found and seen by their friends at McDonald's than literally some of the worst places on planet Earth. They're caught in the parking lot. They're like, I usually don't eat here, but you know, I just own it. I like their burgers.
Dude, for me, you can't beat their breakfast. And when they moved to that all day breakfast, man, that was it. Give me an egg McMuffin. That's cool.
Sorry, Dave. No vegan options though for a guy like you. So you know,
not even vegetarian. Full vegan like that. You know.
You know what, guys? I don't even think this podcast needs an intro. It's already funny enough. We might as well just keep going. Tyson, Easton, how you doing, man? How's it going?
You know, things are great. Really, really good, actually.
I'm glad we're talking McDonald's and stuff. This really has a lot to do with bow hunting, but
I think you gotta stay nourished, you know, even when you're in hunt camp. So do what you gotta do.
I think if a bow hunter can't connect with early morning McDonald's breakfast, they're doing something. So
I'm trying to think when I haven't had McDonald's on a trip. I feel like anytime I go anywhere, we get McDonald's for breakfast. I don't know why. Because to me, there's not that many great breakfast things, especially breakfast. But even, you know, I'm down for a Big Mac. I can handle a Big Mac. That sounds tasty.
Hey, you know, I frequent it and I stay in. I'm in relatively decent shape, all things considered. So my diet surprises some, but I'm a McDonald's believer through and through. But
what about that guy? That
Netflix show. What was that one? They had a series on a guy that did McDonald's for 30 days straight. That's all he ate. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner was McDonald's for 30 days straight. And
I think it was Tyson before and then into the doctor afterwards.
My wife's like, we're not getting McDonald's again. And I'm like, hell, we're not. Their breakfast is awesome.
Well, hey, Dave, if I can't get famous bow hunting, I may as well try to get famous by eating McDonald's.
There you go. Yeah, you could be the new, well, maybe not the, I don't know if Jared's the right thing to compare you to.
I just have this feeling. I have a feeling Tyson's going to send me a picture. It's going to be the XX78 Super Slam with the arrow this big shoved into a Big Mac.
It's going to be a kebab.
There you go.
On an arrow.
There you go.
Big Macs and double cheeseburgers.
Yep. Someone will have to warn Cam Haynes that I'm on the way, you know, to he's doing this whole fitness thing, you know, eat healthy, get back. I'm gonna be opposite. The super size me bow hunter.
McDonald's sponsors you.
That's hilarious. Gosh, that'd be awesome.
But on a serious note, Dave, things here are awesome. It's just been, as you guys know, something's happened in bow hunting this world. I mean, this year,
it's a
resurgence like we've never seen before. I mean, we're going next year into 100-year anniversary here. Wow. And this is going to be a banner year. I mean, just insane growth. And for a company with our kind of understanding of what the aero market looks like, I mean, I would have never guessed. I remember sitting in a meeting, probably February or March of last year, wondering what should we do? You know, are sales going to dry up? Are people going to go bow hunting? I mean, is this going to be, what's this going to look like? And, you know, we made the bet of just holding firm and just continuing to manufacture. And, you know, within 2 months from that time, we were trying to hire and ramp up. And it's just been chasing the demand ever since. We just can't keep up with the shooters out there. You know, there's more arrows that people want than we can make. So it's been a crazy year.
We call that positive problems.
It is,
you know.
No, it is.
But we've heard that a lot, you know, and I don't think anybody expected the COVID years to turn into such a boom for this industry. You know, and I think in looking back on it, I think it makes a little bit of sense. You know, Dave and I at the very minimum, I mean, they're just two guys in the industry. But you give us last year where, you know, we have a regular day job, but, you know, we're now working from home, which makes us be able to work remote, which makes us be able to hunt more, which, you know, and it's just easier to get out and do the things that you love to do. And you have such a better work-life balance doing all that stuff.
Well, and we've seen, you know, I've gone out to retail and worked a handful of days, and then just with our retail partners, I mean, even beyond guys like yourself who've done it, now they're able to do it more, is the guy who had planned a trip to Disneyland with his family and it got canceled. And he had planned to go to 4 or 5 college football games in Alabama with his buddies. And that also got canceled. So, you know, pretty soon these guys are saying, I got to find something I can do. Well, and I got to socially distance. I got to do all of these things. What's the option? How about shooting a bow?
Can't beat that.
And the other big segment that we've seen is shooters, you know, gun shooters, pistol shooters, rifle shooters. They can't get ammo and they still want to shoot. So they, you know, I had a guy come into the shop. I was working actually in Pennsylvania at a shop 2 or 3 months ago. And he, first time ever buying a bow, him and 3 of his buddies showed up and bought brand new, probably $2,000 setup out the door and said, these bullets we can reuse, you know, he's all excited about it. So, you know, I think it's brought people, you know, of all different types, whether they did it as a kid or their dad did it or their grandpa did it. Now they're wanting to get into it, but it's been something like we would have never expected and something that's just really fun to be a part of, to be honest.
That makes a whole heck of a lot of sense, man. And kudos to you guys for such a long heritage. I mean, Easton is well known in the industry for putting out great products, awesome arrows, but I mean, it doesn't stop there. You guys got accessories and all that all over the place. So yeah, you guys are known for your arrows, but I think more important than that, you guys are known for quality.
Yeah. And you know, it's almost, I think that Easton name is almost synonymous with archery. You know, some people, I've gone to the Vegas shoot, I don't know, the last 4 or 5 years in a row, and you'll see guys with different branded arrows, you know, competitor product in our quiver, wearing our shirt, wearing our hat, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it just means that they're into archery. And, you know, it's a cool legacy. The Easton story, I don't know if you've heard the founder story, but Doug Easton in 1921 got into a shotgun accident. He was out hunting upland game, and a shotgun slid off the hood of a car and shot him at point blank in the back of the leg and buttocks. And, you know, in that era, I mean, even now that's a pretty serious injury, but in that era, it was very life-threatening. And in the hospital, he got a book from a guy. It was called Hunting with a Bow and Arrow by Saxton Pope. And that is, for those who know, that is Saxton Pope of Pope and Young, which is something we're all fairly familiar with.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like I say, it was called Hunting with a Bow and Arrow. And he had he wrote this book in conjunction with a Native American who had learned how to make equipment from his ancestors. He was supposedly the last Native American living in the wild in California. And he met with this Saxton Pope guy, and they wrote a book on how to make archery equipment, essentially. And in the hospital, you know, I guess Doug's probably sitting there hurting as a late teenager, saying, "Hey, you know, guns weren't super friendly to me. Maybe I'll try this archery thing." And he gets out of the hospital and starts making bows and arrows in his parents' garage. And his buddies start wanting to buy them from him, and they're saying, "Hey, this is pretty good stuff." And he's selling them around the area a bit. And he's shooting his bow in Van Nuys, California, at a park there. And when he's done shooting, this older gentleman walks up to him and says, "Hey, beautiful bow you have there, and you shoot it really well. Where did you buy it?" And he told the guy, "You know, I made it. I like to make bows. I make some for my friends. You know, this is a bow I made too." And the guy said, "Well, where'd you learn how to make it?" He said, "In a book by Saxton Pope." And the old guy sticks his hand out and says, "I'm Saxton Pope."
No way.
Wild, right?
Wow.
So he meets his mentor, you know, and right after that, he figures, gosh, if this guy's complimenting my equipment, I'm going to start, you know, he's starting to compliment my equipment, I'm going to start a business. And he sent out classified ads. It's kind of cool. There's a museum here in Salt Lake, the Easton Archery Museum, and it shows these old magazine clip outs of classified ads, you know, a dozen cedar match grade shafts for, I don't even remember the price. It's like a dollar a piece or something, right? And he's shipping these all over the country and, you know, very quickly becomes world renowned for making the most accurate cedar, you know, wood cedar shafts of the era. And wow. From there, they get into the aluminum world and, you know, up to where we're at today. So a really fun history for me as a guy who loves bow hunting, but also, you know, I'm passionate about business and I love sales and I love just business management in general. So to be able to be part of that awesome story and the awesome history of a company that makes a product that I love, getting to do a role that I love, it's like a dream come true.
Best of all worlds, man. That's awesome.
I like Tyson's storytelling. It's very good. Yeah. You should start doing that for kids' books.
There you go. Well, if there's money in it, you know, sign me up. And if
that's the business.
If the storybooks can be about archery, I'll have a bigger smile yet on my face.
I'll tell you, we don't have nearly as good of a story over our 11 here.
Yeah, so. Let's hear it.
Our story's
I still want to hear it, though.
Oh, no. So we're one of those garage-built companies, actually. So yeah. The idea was really Dave's. In fact, originally it was more just going to be kind of web-based type of stuff. And Dave comes to me one day, he's like, and keep in mind, I had a video background. I grew up in the video industry. My dad owned a company doing videos and all that kind of stuff. He came to me one day and said, "You know what? We need to start putting this stuff on video." And I looked at him. I go, "Man, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like a good idea." You know, it's like, we can give it a shot, but I'm just not sure, you know. And we built a little studio in Dave's garage, and it just kind of took off from there. So it was, you know, 11 years strong now, but you know, it is kind of weird how you start off and those, like, I don't know if this is ever going to work. I don't know, you know, and then all of a sudden it turns into, you know, a passion of yours and you love it and it, you know, eats up your day and your life and it's all good.
Well, I think from my perspective, you know, for the two of you as a bow hunter, what what I've seen a lot of is people, they want it to be more than a season. You know, in the West, it's August, you know, about mid-August it starts and you can hunt till about the end of September and you're up bow hunting, right? And
yep.
People want to be part of that year round. And whether it's, you know, whether it's wearing a hat, you know, I don't know if you can see that bow hunt, you know, I don't know. I wear it to the gym and somebody says, "Well, you like bow hunting?" I'm like, "Oh yeah, you know, I love it."
Let's talk.
Let's talk, right? And it might be June. It couldn't be further from archery season in the West, but I'm still able to be a part of it by the hat I have on my head or by listening to y'all's podcast. And I think that's a big part of what you're seeing is, you know, we're all hungry for more talk about archery hunting, the history of our sport, you know, and just being a part of other people's stories, you know, their favorite hunting story. I mean, you guys probably have one that comes to mind for you and you've told it 100 times and it's awesome, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think it's interesting too. Like, you know, Tim was talking about that and it brought up, it reminded me the other day, I was talking to my cousin about the history, because some bigger brands now are talking to us about different things and sponsorships and stuff. And I was just kind of mentioning to him and he's like, "Dude, it's like, look how far you guys have came." He's like, "Think about it." He's like, "Think of how many no's you got when you did this, like how many people said no, like, you know, before it got to where it is." And, you know, in my mind, we don't do this for a living. It's not like something we do and we have to make money or all this stuff. We actually created this as more of a library of our stuff. Like, oh, hey, you know, we'll film this hunt and we'll call it Bowhunter Planet and we'll just continue it on YouTube so we can watch it when we get older. And kind of turned into what you just said, like people wanted, they wanted that content. They wanted to see more. They wanted to see what the companies were doing. So I focused always on the bow companies as my number one. So when the bow companies, and I always tell most people, I always felt that when Matthews and Hoyt came on board, I had felt like I made it. Like we actually made it where we need to be for our Test Lab series, which was our biggest thing. It still is today. So on YouTube, we do videos, you know, bow reviews, arrow reviews, whatever it is, we're reviewing products. And when I think back on it, I was like, yeah, when they said, yeah, that was pretty amazing, you know, because like you go from like, I'll never get the big guys to you get the big guys. And then it's like, all right, but now I got the big guys. I got to continue contain the big guys, right? So they don't leave. So I have to do better, better, and better, which is always given a new goal and a new way of looking at the industry. And people have always said, you know, how would you start this, blah, blah, blah. And I always say like, well, you take your investment and you reinvest it. You don't stop investing in your equipment. That's number one. And there was other review shows back when we started. And to be honest, they just fell off the grid because they would pocket the money they'd make on anything they did instead of put it back into their camera equipment and put it into new things like a podcast or whatever. And so they never had that transition to keep going forward. So yeah. A bow manufacturer like Hoyt or Matthews or Elite or whoever it is would say, well, your quality is not as good as like the Bowhunter Planet guys. Why would I do yours if I could just do his, right? So that's kind of what happened. And if they didn't stay at top of the game and they lost. And nowadays we become one of the only ones that are doing bow reviews with bow support from the company. So it's not like I'm a shop and I'm just taking it off my shelf and doing a video for you because I'm selling it to you.
Yep.
That's different than what we do is we show a bow that we're supported by the bow company. They gave us this bow to show to you as a demonstration display. And we're not here to tell you to buy or not buy the bow. We're just here to show you the bow. And so you can understand it before you go to a shop or you take, you know, any information from a shop owner who would of course want to sell you something. That's that you guys want. Everybody wants to sell something. I get it. But the concept's more display. Like, how do you see it? You know, what does it react like? What's the speeds? Is it getting what you claimed it would get? Is your arrow tolerance as real as you say it is? Or will it snap, you know?
Sure.
But, you know, talking about history, for Easton, you know, a couple things that come to my mind with your guys's history is aluminum arrows. And, you know, I mean, I know there's wood and all this, but from my time frame in the 90s, the Game Getter, the XX75, XX78 Super Slams were like huge deal growing up for me. Like that was what I always saved to get. I saved to get the 78s when I had the 75s. So I guess can you walk us through, I guess, that phase of Easton, like, because those were huge arrows, like, and still probably are today, but they were like massive at that time.
Well, I mean, it was the only show in town, right? I mean, I think there is a couple ancillary items out there, you know, if you really look for it, you could find a different arrow, but it dominated the time. And from a historical standpoint, pre-World War II, Greg Easton's our current president. Doug Easton started playing around with aluminum. And his biggest frustration was with the Cedar Arrows. It was twofold. To make a dozen match grade cedar shafts, he would have to start with 400 dowels. Out of 400, he could hone those down and just find ones that the grains of the wood were straight enough that he could make what was considered to him a match grade arrow. So imagine that.
Wow.
Imagine the fallout that out of to make 12 arrows, you threw out almost all 400.
That's a big wood chip pile
that you ended up. Big wood chip pile. So archers at that time in competition or in hunting did what's called clocking their arrows. And they would have every arrow labeled 1 through 12 or 1 through 18 or 1 through 6, however many they had. And then they have like a little 3x5 card in their pocket or on their quiver that would tell them where arrow number one hit. You know, arrow number one, you need to aim high a foot and to the right 2 feet to hit the center, right? And I don't profess to be a great archer, but if that was one of the factors going in my mind, you know, I'm getting ready to pull back on that elk of a lifetime and I'm looking and I say, oh, this is arrow number two. If I want to hit him, you know, I'm only 20 yards away, but I got to aim a foot low and a foot left.
That's a
lot flooding through your mind. Yeah. And Doug was an innovator. You know, he wanted to find a better way and started making some of the first aluminum arrows in proved concept pre-World War II, but aluminum supply dried up throughout the war. And he had to kind of give up on chasing aluminum just because there was no raw material available. And actually to get by us, you know, for the war, he made a lot of cedar map chests to put in planes so that the pilot could easily burn that if needed. You know, the cedar box would burn quickly and burn any sensitive documents.
No way. That's cool.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, there's some of those actually at the museum here in Salt Lake that you can go see. So it was mid-1940s now, and it was kind of early 50s where the aluminum arrow started to dominate. And the first archer to use aluminum in competition was looked down on. They tried to ban him from participating in the tournament. That's not real archery if it's not a wooden arrow. Wow. You know, you can't compete. He was a no-name archer, and I wish I'll get fact-checked by somebody I work with. I wish I could remember the amount that he won by, but it was like a drastic win. No name archer that just came in and dominated the whole event. Within a couple of years, you know, you have some of those people who really tried to fight against the introduction of aluminum into archery. You see that a little bit today, right? With some of the purists and different aspects of archery.
Of course.
Can't hunt on Sunday.
Can, there you go. I mean,
no crossbows.
No crossbows. I've heard people, you know, I won't hunt over water, but I'll hunt over a bait pile because they're reliant on water. They're not reliant on corn. I don't know. Everybody's got their own mantra, right?
No doubt.
So it was really from there, Dave, that the aluminum arrow just began to dominate. And, you know, the Super Slam was actually a tribute arrow for Chuck Adams. You know, he was the first person to accomplish a Super Slam. So kind of an iconic figure in bow hunting. I think a lot of people, maybe even people my age, maybe, you know, haven't heard of him and don't follow him, but he was kind of one of the originals really getting, putting down animals. And the Super Slam was a tribute to him. To your point, Dave, we still sell a lot of aluminum arrows today.
Interesting.
I think it's about 40% of our sales have an aluminum element. So it's pretty telling to see that it's still in vogue. And we make some different variations of aluminum arrows now. Most people are probably familiar with the FMJ. We've done kind of retro versions of the FMJ throughout the years, trying to mimic the Autumn Orange arrow, you know, similar label, similar decoration, but modern technology with the FMJ. And obviously all of our AC products, a lot of guys on the podcast might remember the ACC Hunter Pro.
ACC.
I couldn't afford them. Arrow I was shooting when I started at Easton, actually. And I shoot the Pro Comp now, and it's that AC construction. So it still has the aluminum component for the arrow's core, and then the exterior is carbon.
I couldn't afford them. I remember the ACCs. I don't know what they were there. I don't want to say at the time. This is a long time ago, but in like 2000 or something, 98, 2000 in there, whatever it came out.
Just a poor, broke college. So hot.
We want to thank our outdoor partners for their dedication to the outdoor hunting heritage. It's because of you the sport of hunting continues to educate, motivate, and feed people around the world.
Yeah. What replaced the ACC, the FMJ?
You know, probably the best comparison to an ACC today would be the Pro Comp in the hunting line. And it's still an aluminum core with the carbon exterior. So very, very similar. The Pro Comp is a smaller diameter arrow. So it's the smallest diameter arrow made. It's a 4 millimeter shaft. So
is 6.5, is that a normal or is that big?
That's standard diameter.
That's so standard.
6.5 is your standard diameter. From there, we step down to 6 millimeter, 5 millimeter, which is your axis and FMJ. And then the micro diameter is 4 millimeter.
This Camel Hunter, XX75 Camel Hunter, is this the biggest like aluminum arrow you guys sell right now?
Yeah. Yep.
Is that aluminum?
No, we still sell XX75 Camel Hunters. We sell Game Getters. We have Fall Stalkers in our line. And then a lot of the target line still, we have the RX7, X23s, X25s, and X27s, which are all aluminum as well.
Is the 70H retired now?
Yes.
I want to cry.
I didn't know. Day from day.
Dang it.
And truth be told, you know, for the target archers on the podcast, I mean, they know aluminum in that world is still very, you know, that's what a lot of the pros are shooting at these events. From a standpoint of spine consistency,
Experience the power of 5G with T-Mobile. With faster 5G speeds nationwide, you can upload your favorite videos super fast or game on the go. Plus, T-Mobile has more 5G bars in more places, so you can stay connected to what matters most from almost anywhere. Switch to T-Mobile today, the leader in 5G.
T-Mobile has America's largest 5G network, fastest based on median overall combined 5G speeds, according to analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence data 5G speeds for Q4 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
You know the old saying, selling like hotcakes? What does that even mean? What is a hotcake anyway? They should change it to selling like Hondas, because right now, Hondas are selling faster than ever. Probably because they're so rugged, long-lasting, and fuel-efficient. And if you want one, you should get to your local Honda dealer right away. Check out the 8-passenger Pilot, or maybe the adventurous Passport. But you gotta do it fast, because Hondas are selling like, well, Hondas. New models are arriving right now. Don't wait. See your local Honda dealer today.
One arrow to the next, and weight consistency, as well as what we refer to as spine around shaft. So the stiffness around the entire shaft is unmatched by aluminum. You know, it's by far the most consistent arrow on the market.
This, I was just looking at your book here. I was looking at, let me see here. I'll share it here. 1 second. Click here, click there, share screen. This one here, this whiteout is sick.
It is.
I love that it's all white like that. I mean, Tim, think how easy you could find this arrow when you shoot.
Oh no doubt. Gosh. No, that's a great point, man. After you take that shot, a lot of those black carbon ones, you know, you kind of lose it. If you don't have a lighted knock on this, that's a great awesome point, dude.
Yeah, it and, you know, it really ties in well. You can see if you scroll back up. Oh, you're playing the video now. Here you go.
Oh, dang.
Got him.
Yeah, wow. It's made for visibility and honestly, just even in flight anymore. I mean, bows are shooting so fast. That wide arrow shows up really nicely just in flight. It also really plays on some, it's really cool looking. I mean, that's what gets me on it. It's got an aluminum insert that right there, it's kind of highlighted, sticks out, and it looks really nice on a white shaft. little, you know, orange insert, orange label, orange.
That's cool.
Fletchings. That's cool. I'm not much of a style guy or fashion guy, Dave, but when it comes to archery, man, I'm telling you, the quiver accent matches the bolt accent on the cam. And I'm looking at my bow right now. It's looking like a little more, probably much more fashionable than I look on a daily basis.
This is cool too. I like this. You got split where it's half white all the way up. That's cool.
Yep. On the new Legacy, Carbon Legacy shaft. Yeah, that's big sweet. In that trad world. And really what we did there is did the first step for people who want to do their own custom cresting.
Oh.
First step is they dip the back end of the arrow white and then crest it from there. And, you know, some people in the market, they'll sell a pre-crested arrow, but cresting is kind of a sign of, it was like a family symbol or an individual signature of how you crested your own arrows.
Yeah.
And, to kind of try to stay true to the history of why people crest their arrows, we didn't feel the need to do the painting ourselves as part of the decoration, but allow somebody that wants to kind of keep that tradition alive to do it on their own.
Yeah, that's cool, man.
This is cool too. The X's. I think I've seen this before. This type of look on another arrow. I'm not sure it was this one. I thought it was maybe it was the ACC or something. I remember seeing these X's. Maybe Full Metal Jacket. I'm thinking.
Yeah, and you know, I hate to say it, that's been a recent discontinuance there, Dave.
This
the
one?
Matrix. Yeah, the Matrix sold really, really well, and we made it to design or to highlight Easton's seamless carbon design. None of our carbon arrows have a seam. They're all made. A process called pultrusion. And there's a really cool video, Dave, even if you wanted to link it to this podcast, of kind of a Easton how it's made video. But the Matrix was designed to highlight that. With the increased demand with the COVID's presented, the Matrix ran about 4 times slower than other products here in our Salt Lake City factory. And it just didn't make sense to slow up production on an aesthetic piece. So it was something I've never been a part of here was a mid-year discontinuance, and we really tried to avoid it. But in the spirit of trying to get as much product out as possible, we just cut it.
Yeah. And then are these made at the same facility?
Yes, they are.
Okay.
Yep. So we manufacture both carbon and aluminum arrows right here in Salt Lake. And, you know, Dave, Tim, if you're ever in the Salt Lake area again, love to show you through the factory and, awesome. You know, get you a little behind the scenes tour. The online video, you know, the Easton How It's Made video online is, I think it's about 7 or 8 minutes. And it does a pretty good job of giving it kind of a high level feel of what's going on, but there's nothing like seeing it in person.
Is this, do you guys have a name for this camo?
Or not? Oh, we do. That is called, I think it's called Woodland.
Yeah, I think it's funny because a lot of these camos are kind of the original type camos, but I feel so funny because I feel like they're all on their way back now. Like everybody kind of has been looking for these and seeing
the retro type of camos. Yeah.
Well, like Fred Bear did it, right? With Bear Archery did it with their Fred Bear camo. They've been pushing that, and it's, you start to see it a lot. You're like, wow, even like the Realtree originals and stuff and Mossy Oaks, they're starting to come back. And like, I love this. This looks sweet to me. Like when I'm looking at this, I'm like, damn, I wish my bow was this color.
It's a Rambo camo there.
Yeah,
so it's kind of interesting you say that, Dave. I mean, that legacy type nostalgia definitely has been in, you know, across multiple industries, not just the archery industry. And we've played on that with the FMJ line. We designed that exact look that you have on the screen. It was a couple years ago as a limited edition arrow. I don't think you'll see it on the site anymore. It was just we did it for 2 years. And so it was that exact same look, but with brand new FMJ technology.
That's cool.
Yeah, so I think it's
with,
go ahead, Tim,
with the product lineup that you guys have, and your product lineup is huge. From a consumer purchasing perspective, is there a clear winner? I have to imagine there isn't.
You know, on the hunting side of things, we really have three real heavy hitters there, right? FMJ 5mm is a staple product. Nobody else has anything close to it in the industry. It's the hardest hitting, best penetrating arrow on the market. It's that slick exterior coating combined with a heavier arrow. I mean, you shoot that time and time again into foam, and you'll notice, even just shooting targets, how much better that arrow penetrates than a carbon equivalent.
Can you explain this real quick? What is this? How is this like, what's, if I cut this in half, what am I going to see?
If you cut it in half, you'll see a carbon arrow on the inside wrapped with an aluminum arrow.
So this is this is the concept of the ACC originally, right?
It's the inverse of an ACC. An ACC has aluminum on the inside and carbon on the outside. From a hunting scenario, we found in testing that aluminum exterior, really, there's a lot less resistance as it penetrates in either an animal, ballistic gel, or in foam. Wow. So to get that on the exterior of a carbon shaft gives you the strength and durability of aluminum combined with that penetrating slick exterior coating the strength of carbon with the slick exterior coating of aluminum to help with penetration, as well as just extreme. My dad likes them because they're easy to pull from targets. You know,
yeah, no, that's fingers. That's huge in and of itself. I mean, a lot of people buy different targets for their arrow, but why not buy the arrow instead of the target? That's a great point.
You see this, Tim? Different size, one end to the other.
Yeah.
Interesting. So more weight up front.
Tapered shafts and barreled shafts are nothing new for Easton. This was released, the T64 was released a couple years ago, but, you know, as a fun side fact, we just had the Olympic Games, as probably a lot of people, you know, maybe tuned in and watched a little bit of the archery for that segment. Every Olympic medal since archery was in the Olympics has been won with an Easton arrow. And they've all been won with a barreled design shaft. So kind of playing off that taper, it's an arrow called DX10 and has really just dominated that recurve market in an incredible way, really.
Well, speaking of winning, Dave, I mean, Easton's been a winner around here as well, haven't they?
Gold. Golden Arrow Awards. You guys won the gold. I knew someone would talk to you.
Yeah, look at this.
There you go.
Oh, it's there.
Jamie actually got it out on time.
Wow.
All right. Yeah, he got here a couple days ago.
The 2021 Bow Hunter Planet Golden Arrow Awards.
That is awesome. Look, you're the first person.
The arrow. Yeah.
First person to have that award. Was... Yeah.
The only thing you missed was putting my name on it, Dave. I never win an award. So, you know, it reminded me of what is it? A scene from The Grinch. Right, where he wins the award, you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, yes, yeah, for sure. Yeah, that was cool, man. I mean, it was really fun this year, kind of putting that back out there. We took a little bit of a break from those awards, but thought it was really important from an industry and you know, just a community perspective to see what everybody's liking, what, you know, everybody thinks. And you know, I'll tell you what, it wasn't a surprise that you guys won by any means. I mean, you got everything that we've talked about tonight, you hit it right on the head. I mean, you guys put out such quality products and for such a long time, your brand recognition and everything is just amazing. So kudos to you for winning, but it is really cool to see that you guys are still out there. You know, it's awesome to see, like, when we get that feedback and we have people answering those surveys that we put out, that people in the industry, actual hunters that are voting on this, are actually using your stuff.
Yep. So. Well, and I think, you know, I talked a little bit about the legacy and story of our company. And I think for some, it might be easy to kind of sit back on our coattails and yeah, we're all that in a bag of donuts because we've been around forever. But look, you know, as a made in USA company, we have to earn the right every day to manufacture our products here.
No doubt.
We take it very seriously, you know, the quality aspect, making sure we have the right product line, our marketing message. You know, we don't just want to hang our hat on we've been in business for a long time, or even the fact that we're made in the USA. I think those are nice punctuation points. And, you know, we refer to that internally as, you know, that's the period at the end of the sentence. But the sentence needs to have meat, which is we make quality products. We provide the market with the products that they're looking for, you know, hitting the proper weights, having the right components for our products. And I think at the end of the day, that's, you know, that's where our focus really tries to be. Not on not on, hey, we've been here for 100 years, we're going to be here for 100 more. You know, we have to live that and earn that every day.
Well, and that's easy to do personally, right? It's easy to say, okay, I hit my goal now, you know, I'm just going to take a little break for a little bit. We're not going to worry about things. But to do that as a company, right? And to be able to put out products over an organization like your guys's, year after year, time and time again, really says something about the passion of not just the owners, but the employees underneath of it.
Well, everybody's a hunter, so it helps.
Yeah.
It always helps. And we all eat McDonald's too.
There you go.
So I had to bring
that. I'm starting to feel like you guys use muley deer meat in your McDonald's over there or something.
Hey, we might. No, I mean, you know, I'll say it just 100% honest. I mean, we have an amazing owner. You know, we're still family owned. Greg Easton's our owner now. I went to lunch with him 2 or 3 weeks ago. He's an extremely humble, hardworking guy. Who what he cares about is his people. He cares about the people that work at his companies. He wants them to be happy. He wants them to enjoy going to work. And I think he truly means it. I don't think he's fueled by money. I think he's fueled by making sure that the people that work here enjoy it. And it just throughout our organization, I mean, it's just full of good people. And it's something I've never once not wanted to go to work. You know, I get to work with people that I'd spend time with either way, people that like to do what I like to do.
Tyson, did you grow up in Utah?
I did. Yeah. I grew up in a small town in northern Utah, kind of a, we had 3 stoplights, Dave, for what it's worth. So, you know.
Now, can you guys, did you hunt your whole life?
Yeah, I've hunted since I was a little kid. I mean, my grandpa was a very passionate hunter. You know, my dad passed that on to us. I picked up bow hunting. My dad bow hunted as a teenager and in early years in college. I picked it up when I was 14. My brother got a bow for his birthday, and his birthday's in January, mine's in April. And in April, you can guess what I asked for. I wanted a bow as well. And I mean, our early years out bow hunting, I mean, it's almost embarrassing, Dave. I think I had 2 or 3 different arrows in my quiver, probably 3 different broadheads on every one of those things. I didn't know what broadhead tuning was. All I knew is if something came within 20 yards, I was going to smoke it. We had a couple good years, you know. I mean, I think my first year I can remember missing a few times.
That was all of us.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, you know, the one thing that's never changed, I guess, for bow hunting with me is every time I go in the field, I think, what am I doing? I have a stick and a bow with a point on the front of it. I can't kill anything with this, you know? And I've thought that since I was a kid. And I thought that I went out, 2 weekends ago. And I'm wandering around with a bow, bugling at elk and cow calling at elk, wondering, what am I doing? You know? And
but people have been doing it for thousands of years, right?
Yeah, that's crazy.
So, absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely. So I think for me, that's, you know, it started there, and progressively we kind of started to hang up the guns every year, you know, and what we wanted to focus on with bow hunting. It was just I mean, you guys know, everybody on the podcast knows that's listening, but there's this fuel of wanting to be close to an animal, and this, you know, it's almost an intimate experience to be within that danger zone of a predator that they would typically have. It's a surreal experience. It's almost impossible to explain. I don't get it gun hunting. I enjoy gun hunting. It's still, you know, a social experience, but I don't get that high or that real deep enjoyment that I do when I have a bow. I feel like there's a mutual respect between the predator and prey in that situation. That's just, it's beautiful for me to be a part of. I could, you don't want to get me going on that, Dave. You'll be muting my microphone in a minute.
I think it's like that with hunting, because in Michigan it's a little different than Utah, because here we're flat ground and we can't stalk animals. So we sit in a tree stand all day. It's kind of refreshing and relaxing. Yeah. Or a ground blind, but usually we're just sitting there. But one of the cool parts is not necessarily like stalking up on a deer, which would be awesome if it could happen. I have done it a few times. It's not easy to do here. Very slow walk, like very slow, like 1 step, don't move for like maybe a minute. Next step, don't move for 30 seconds, like whatever. But when you get into the zone, like a kill zone, of an animal comes into your kill zone or whatever, it's one of the coolest feelings, because you're like, oh my god, like this is gonna happen, like I can
it's
actually,
about to go down.
These things are like ghosts, right? I mean, they're like ghosts. They, you never see them, you know, when you're walking through the woods, if you're talking to your girlfriend, whatever, walking through the woods, and you know, you'll never, the odds of seeing a deer, they hear you coming, they're out of there, you know. So it's like, it's one of the most amazing animals to hunt, in my opinion. And when you get in that position to take a shot and you pull back your bow at full draw and it's locked in place and you know it still doesn't know, you're like, oh my gosh, it's gonna happen. That's like the best feeling, man. That's the best feeling.
Well, it just seems when you go out and all odds are against you, you know, I think most bow hunters have probably been approached by people who don't like hunting, or, you know, maybe confronted by it. And what I always tell them is we are at every way you can think of it at a disadvantage. Yep. A deer can see better. A deer can smell better. A deer can run faster. They can run further. It's also a home court advantage. You're in their house.
Yeah.
They know where every rock, where every tree, where every bush is. And they know if something doesn't like look quite right up in a tree, it wasn't there the day before, they look up. They know.
Oh, yeah, that's crazy.
And being part of, you know, the food chain of getting your own food and being part of that kind of natural predation is an experience that I think it's in our DNA. I think our forefathers had to do it. And when you channel that inner, I don't know, hunter-gatherer instinct, and you're a part of putting food on your table, and you know what happened to that meat, you know that it's, you know, you want to talk, I mean, you talked vegan at the beginning of it, but we'll talk.
I don't think it's vegan. I think I found it now. I'm going to show you in a minute. I pulled it up, but I was a little wrong on the vegan part.
Oh, okay. You were off. But when you have that, you know, organic, healthy, all natural meat, like it's just a really neat thing to be a part of in putting food on your own plate.
100%.
Yeah. All right. Here it is. I think this is what I was talking about in the beginning. I don't know why I said vegan, but I think this is it here.
Oh gosh. Okay. Jelly.
You been here?
Jelly pig, a jelly jar. No, I've never even heard of it. That doesn't look vegan to me.
Vegan.
Okay.
Pig out
for some reason.
Okay. I think he's pulling one over on us just to save face now.
Yeah, you're right.
This is not real. This is not real. No, I'm not believing it.
He brings up the most macho meat restaurant he could find in Salt Lake.
You know it. I'm seeing through this
one. It's true. I just messed with you guys. But I did find this one. I was looking for the other one. No, the other one was like a weird, it was like cream cheeses and bagels. I don't know, man. So anyway.
Well, that one looked pretty good.
It did look good. It's in your neck of the woods over there. Pig and a jelly jar restaurant, Salt Lake City.
No,
you need to go over there. It says Ogden?
Ogden?
Thank you.
Ogden.
Is that close? I only saw the 2 seconds.
Is that close to you or no?
Yeah, it's about probably about 45 minutes north of Salt Lake.
I feel like you should go there soon and then do a review and send it to us so we can add it into this.
Okay. I'll stop by McDonald's on the way back if my experience there.
There you go.
Yeah, when we were in Utah, we went to everywhere. We went to the, is it the Mormon Museum and stuff like that? Does that sound?
Yeah,
right?
there's like a
church.
It's called Temple Square. It's like right downtown Salt Lake City, and it's kind of this. It's under construction right now. It was beautiful gardens and a nice.
Yeah, it was really cool. There.
Yeah,
we had a great time, and then we were in I probably pronounced it wrong. Is it Alta?
Alta. I was gonna save you. I heard you start Alta.
Alta, yes. And that was gorgeous. And we saw moose like every day walk by. But there was a wedding we went to there. That's why we were there. And so when you're hunting there, are you mainly hunting mule deer?
Mule deer and elk. I mean, that's kind of Utah specifically is kind of tough with mule deer. They changed it a couple years ago, probably 5 years ago, where you're not even guaranteed to get an archery tag every year.
Oh.
It's almost an every other year thing for muleys, unfortunately.
And your resin. That's crazy.
Yeah, and that's specific to archery. I mean, you can typically find like a muzzleloader hunt that they'll have leftover tags, but it's not a great unit. It's mostly private property. So what I do mostly in Utah is elk hunt. There's good elk herds, and you can hunt cow or spike on any of the good limited entry units. So, you know, and with an elk, man, they're such a big animal. Whether it's got antlers or not, it's still pretty exciting to have a, you know, a giant cow elk at 20 yep. yards or 30 yards. And then you're still a part of that, what I would consider one of the most majestic animals to watch during the rut. You know, screaming bugles from when you're hiking in the morning to 11, 12 o'clock in the morning sometimes, you know, clear to yeah. noon.
That's the coolest thing to hear, man.
Do you guys have grizzly there?
In Utah, no. No grizzly bears.
Black bear?
There are. Not a lot. I think I've only seen one black bear in the wild in Utah ever.
Cougar?
You're funny. Lots of cougars.
Wolves?
I think the DWR official statement is there's no wolves, but a guy shot a wolf. He was coyote hunting and shot a wolf in, I think it was Cedar City a couple, probably 2 years ago. And so, you know, he reported it and said, hey, I made an honest mistake. And the DWR said, well, you know, we've announced that there aren't any here. So you don't.
It's a coyote.
You don't have
to. Now.
There's no rules. There's none here. So.
Well, you never expect to be able to have to identify it if they don't say that there's any there for sure.
Yeah.
I think that's how, and I didn't follow it through, but you know, if you've ever seen a wolf next to a coyote, they're about 47 times larger.
Yeah.
I saw that video.
That is a good point though, because when an animal is by itself, it's hard to guess the size. Like there's been so many times where like, there's been a deer that comes out and you're like, oh my God. And it's doe usually, right? When it happens more with doe than anything like with antlers or anything like that. But a doe will come out and you'll be like, oh man, this thing's looking nice, man. I'm going to take this thing. And then all of a sudden mom comes in behind it. You're like, oh, never mind. It's a little bit smaller than I thought.
Yep. It happens all the time, especially bear hunting.
Bear hunting too. Yeah, for sure.
I shot at my bear. I was like 86 pounds. And I was like, I thought for sure it was like 200 pounds. I was like, oh my God, this thing's huge. And we found it. I'm like, that's the bear. Are you sure? Did I shoot that one behind the other one? And they're like, no, that's your bear. I'm like, whoa. And it looked like I threw it on my shoulder. I'm like, what the hell is this? A cub?
It is deceiving, especially bears so have deceiving. So much fur, man. They're yeah. like, you know.
Well, and depending on the time of year, you know, coming right out of hibernation, they are skinnier and they just look different yeah. than, you know, later in the season too. So
yeah, I've been bear hunting once and I just looked over at my friend Ross and I just kept saying, should I shoot that one? And he shake his head. No. I'm yeah. like, okay. You
know, I think
they all look huge now, to me.
They do look big by themselves. And if you like Tim said, if they come in together, you're like, oh, whoa, yeah, there's a huge difference. But
yeah,
deer all the time. It happens to me with does all the time. I'm like, oh, maybe a shooter.
Yeah.
And then you see the big mom come out. Oh, there she is.
Oh yeah. No, for sure.
It's like double the size. You're like, oh. All right. Well, Tyson Easton, man, I don't know, man. There's not much left to say. It's a great brand. It's been around for so many, 100 years, you said. So that's incredible. That's yeah. absolutely incredible.
Congratulations on the Bow Hunter Planet Award.
Yeah, it's this awesome.
Year. So always good cool. to see your name spotlighted. So
yeah.
EastonArchery.com. I mean, We're just happy for the support and happy for, you know, I'm happy to be on here and enjoyed the time, enjoyed the chat. So thanks a bunch, you guys.
Good deal.
Yeah, very welcome, guys. Go to EastonArchery.com to learn more about them full metal jackets because they are sick, as well as all the other great arrows they have. And you can also get an Easton clock on there, I saw, which is really cool and could be.
Maybe I'll send you one, Dave, for your backdrop. Yes,
I will take an Easton clock. That is the coolest looking clock. I was like,
all right, I'm writing a note right now.
I will see you guys next time on the Bowhunter Planet Podcast.
Experience the power of 5G with T-Mobile. With faster 5G speeds nationwide, you can upload your favorite videos super fast or game on the go. Plus, T-Mobile has more 5G bars in more places, so you can stay connected to what matters most from almost anywhere. Switch to T-Mobile today, the leader in 5G.
T-Mobile has America's largest 5G network, fastest based on median overall combined 5G speeds, according to analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence data 5G speeds for Q4 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
You know the old saying, selling like hotcakes? What does that even mean? What is a hotcake anyway? They should change it to selling like Hondas, because right now, Hondas are selling faster than ever. Probably because they're so rugged, long-lasting, and fuel-efficient. And if you want one, you should get to your local Honda dealer right away. Check out the 8-passenger Pilot, or maybe the adventurous Passport. But you gotta do it fast, because Hondas are selling like, well, Hondas. New models are arriving right now. Don't wait. See your local Honda dealer today.